Hello and welcome to this latest Racing Post Bloodstock postcast. I'm Martin Stevens. I've got my colleague James Thomas here. And our guest this time is Bloodstock consultant Billy Jackson Stops. Hello, Billy. Thank you for coming down. How was the journey?
That was very hot. Yeah. Couple of stops on the tube there with James was quite a sweaty mess. But yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's very kind of you.
Now, you've been in the news a bit recently, most recently, because Shaden, your purchase last year, won listed Rose Bowl Stakes at Newbury on Friday. Congratulations. Can you just tell us a bit about her and what her future plans might be?
Yeah, I got a bit of luck there early on in my career. Probably used up all my luck already. But she was a purchase from Tattersall's Ascot Yearling Sale. She was a second top lot there. By no name, never. Took a bit of a gamble on her, really. You know, she wasn't that big. She's slightly slack pastens. But obviously the pedigree was second to none. And she's done the job for us now. She's got her black type. And I think going forward, there's the Group 3 at Goodwood called the Prestige over seven furlongs. So I think we'll go there. It's notoriously, well, has been not that strong in recent years. So, you know, maybe that, the Dick Pool's an option. Mm-hmm. Dick Pool, I think, yeah, that's the one I saw. Yes, yeah. So those would be the two. I mean, there was a horse that hadn't even won a maiden that came second in that last year, I think.
Okay.
Mike Bells, you know, so those are two kind of races that you'd try and go to. And if she keeps improving, then you just keep stepping forward from there, really.
Yeah. You mentioned her pedigree there. She's by No Nay Never, who was a sprinter. And most of his stock so far have been sprinters and precocious. But you think that she will get that seven furlongs?
Sadler's Wells mare, so there's a bit of stamina on that side. The way it's looked so far, she's kind of, especially the other day, she did her best work was late on, just kind of grinding down that winner. The leader at the time, and Misty Gray. So it looks that way, and I would suggest, just judging on the family, which were kind of best over a mile, there's actually, she's brother to a horse that was fairly decent over 2.5 miles.
Right, okay.
So I'd say from the dam side, there's no stopping her on the stamina front.
And the other important thing about her pedigree is that she is out of Amethyst, who is quite an old mare by, I think she's something like the 15th foal out of the dam or something like that.
Spot on.
She was a listed winning sister to King of Kings, Guineas winner, turn of the millennium. Did that put you off? Do you think it put other people off?
I very, very possibly. Statistically, buying foals out of old mares doesn't really work. You know, there's numbers there that support that. But at the same time, the position I was in, you know, I didn't have a huge sum of money. So it was quite a good angle for me to get a decent pedigree for a little bit less. I mean, I think there's been multiple horses. I think New Approach is down. I think his down was about 20 something. Yeah, so I mean, it's not the end of the world, but it would have definitely put a few people off. And I saw Nancy Sexton was very quick to put something up on Twitter saying, you know, this was the 15th foal and et cetera, et cetera. But in answer to your question, yeah, it would have put a few people off, I think.
Do you think that some agents can be a bit too prescriptive when it comes to things like that? Or do you think people are just playing the percentages?
Yes, I think they would be. But there is, you know, if the numbers are against that kind of thing, you know, statistically, if it's proven that you are limiting your chances of buying a good horse, then rightly so. I think that's probably, you know, if you've got enough money, you don't need to take a risk at doing that. You know, we did take a risk and it's paid off. That's it, really. You know, if you've got enough money, don't take the risk if you know it's possibly minimising your chances.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Shaden didn't cost a bomb considering she had that pedigree. I suppose probably because of that older dam. She was 42,000 from the Tattersall's Ascot Sale, which is a relatively new fixture on the sales circuit, but has done quite well, isn't it? There's been a few good graduates this year.
It's flying. Like the Breeze Up Sale goes really well as well. And the Ascot Breeze Up Sale there as well. But that Yearling Sale, it's great that Matt Pryor's taken it up. Like he's one of Newmarket's great men, and I think he'll do a great job doing that. But even that winner there, the sprint the other day, I think came out of Tats Ascot for $3,000, the Angel filly.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of winners that come out of it. And I'd say she'd probably be the first slightly classier horse, but it's encouraging signs.
Yeah. So stepping back then, what was your route to becoming the bloodstock consultant you are now in the news all the time for your purchases? Where did you start out? Because I think it's fair to say 2 or 3 years ago in the Northern Hemisphere, we didn't really hear so much of you.
So I was I've kind of come up through the assistant trainer ranks, mm-hmm. And the intention was always to be a trainer. And I, you know, did a couple of years with Rafe Beckett as his assistant trainer, and Ollie and Hector Stevens when they were training. And then I was fortunate enough to be asked to go down and assist Godolphin in Australia, and went down there and did a couple of years down there, and then came back here. And obviously, you kind of you're out of the loop a little bit. Then you haven't seen anyone on the circuit around here. And also, having worked for Godolphin, it's not like you're kind of in there in the, with milling around in the public constantly. You're kind of private places and hidden away a little bit. So it's taken quite a long time to get back in. And I didn't help myself by probably doing it on my own when I should have. I tried very hard to get a job with any agent, really. And there was a lot of people that gave me a lot of time. Like even the young guys, Alex Elliott was brilliant. You know, I did a lot of time just going around with him and just pestering him. You know, I just asked him a million and one questions. But I couldn't, there was no one that was looking to employ someone at that time. Didn't want to go back to being an assistant trainer. You know, I was just about to turn 28. And it was, you know, it's quite a tough gig, and there weren't really any positions I would like to take. So ended up doing my own thing, and I've just been very lucky along the way, really.
Yeah. So now you're buying bloodstock regularly, and I think James had more in-depth questions about your buying policy and how you choose the horses you do.
Looking forward to it.
Well, no, I was just going to ask sort of what kind of work you would do before a sale. You know, if we're looking at public auction yearlings or foals, whatever, you know, so you mentioned the sort of stats around older mares. What other things would you be doing before you actually get to the sales ground to look at a horse in the flesh? I mean, is there, can you do the majority beforehand, or does a lot of it have to be just done?
So a lot of agents, I think there'd be a fair few guys that probably wouldn't do that much work on a catalogue, and they, you know, they think it's all in the physical. I kind of think the other way to that. I would spend a huge amount of time in the catalogue, and you'd be putting through every single cross and the, you know, the best horses, you know, best dam sires and strike rates. And especially, I was lucky enough last year, I kind of knew what I was doing, looking for two-year-olds. So then you're just looking at the strike weights of stallions with their two-year-olds kind of thing. So you can take away quite a few stallions off of that straight away. But then the dam sire is quite an important aspect to me as well. You know, if as a dam sire, the kind of best things out of mares by that sire have only ever been 100. That's rated 100, let's say, for example. Like someone put a horse up to me the other day that trying to sell to Australia. And the best horse that had come through on the dam sire side there was only ever rated 100 from multiple horses. Right. You're slightly limiting your chance by doing that. So you kind of, I'm looking for small angles, I suppose, and that's quite a big one. I've teamed up this year with a guy called Bill Oppenheim, who's going to be quite helpful in helping me research the pedigrees a little bit more. And he's very knowledgeable at what type of mares are going to stallions and kind of which stallions are going to have a better chance than others. And, obviously those crosses, which is just, for me, it's so important, even dropping back to the second dam. And that would all be in the, I'd have it all marked up in the catalogue, like my pages in the catalogue quite full on. There's a lot of writing all over the place. And then you're obviously going through progeny and just putting in handicaps and distances and ground and stuff like that. So you're trying to basically minimise your risk as much as possible. That's it, yeah.
Okay, very good. And then obviously away from public auctions is also private purchases. I mean, you know, the likes of me and Martin are always told that's a very hot market, especially for sort of prospect for Australia and stuff. Is that the case? Is that something you've got involved in?
Very much so. It's because of the, obviously coming back from the background of an assistant trainer there, my, I feel like a strength is horses and training. It's an area I absolutely love. And, you know, I'd watch a huge amount of racing between Australia and England and Hong Kong now. It's so difficult to buy horses in training privately. The moment you put a figure to someone, they think that if you're interested, that actually they can probably squeeze you for a bit more and getting through the veterinary stage and getting these agreements done. I was very fortunate last year. You know, I've been doing this on my own now for about a year and a half, and bought my first horse privately last year called Future Score, who I bought out of a Pontefract maiden on a Sunday. And I think maybe I was fortunate enough that a couple of people probably missed it. And he went down to Australia and he's kind of flying the flag for me down there now. He's gone through the ranks. And
was he a Godolphin cast off?
He was a Godolphin cast off, brought by Chris Dixon, and won first up for Chris. And he was out of an assisted to Enki. Okay. And won a mile maiden and had this kind of big staying pedigree and very late maturing. And the dam won a Cesarewitch trial at age 4 or something. So there was a bit of scope there that down the line he was going to go forward. Yeah. And he's done just that. A couple of weeks ago, won, I think he won a 150 grand handicap there on the Saturday at Flemington. And he's got a big spring campaign lined up for Australia. So,
good. You know, is he with Dan there?
Matty Kamani.
Okay, brilliant. Oh,
yeah. So he's a lovely bloke. So, yeah, I mean, little things like that. I mean, again, probably quite lucky, but I've been very fortunate that he's kind of going along, flying the flag down there for me, which is great.
Another of your cross-hemisphere exploits that's put you in the news in the last year is your purchase of the Northern Hemisphere rights to Stand Kuroshio. It's a very interesting story, Kuroshio, because he was a relatively obscure stallion when he shuttled up here, first of all, into Europe, over Bree Stud a few years ago, and only produced a very small first crop. That crop ran last year and completely surpassed expectations, had horses like Duncarron and Daphinia and Curious, who has now gone on this year to become a very progressive sprinter. So you bought him with the Northern Hemisphere rights last year, and you've brought him to Clongiffin Stud. And that's for Abdulaziz Al Rabban, the man who owns Shaden. So how's that got on?
It's amazing how these things work. We were looking for a bit of an angle to try and make a little bit of money with Mr. Abdulaziz, who he's a businessman and just quite likes. He just loves that kind of angle to try and make something rather than spurge it down the drain. And this horse came up. I used to run the Flemington stable for Godolphin, so I was very much involved in the Victoria operation, where Kuroshio stood in the Victoria part of Godolphin and shared an office with the general bloodstock Godolphin manager. And he came over to Ascot last year, and I was telling him, Kuroshio is flying. He's got Daphinia was second in the Marygate.
Yes.
And then just, you know, obviously Goodwood and Duncarron, that was after Ascot, obviously, but he then came into light. And he wasn't good enough in Australia. They were thinking they wanted to get rid of him. So I mentioned this to Mr. Abdulaziz, and we did a bit of research, watched a few more of the horses go. Obviously, the form of the St. Mary, of the Queen Mary last year, the Curious ran him, was unbelievable. And thought that she was going to come out and be quite good. And so we eventually got the deal done. I learned from my mistakes with Spill the Beans that probably England is not the place for an Australian stallion. It's just not the quantity of broodmares here. So we went to Ireland, and it's worked incredibly well. He covered 113 mares. Which is phenomenal. And that's, we went through it the other day. Obviously, Kessart, Tally Ho, James Garfield, Rathbarry, Jungle Cat, all these new sires have gone to these big studs. He covered more than all of them.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a feat. Like, and all credit to Micheál Orlandi. He's an incredible, he's a genius talker, and he's a hell of a businessman. He got it done, and he knows all the right people. And I think we had the right horse, which was key. So it's worked very well.
And from being obscure, do you now, when you talk to people in the industry, do they know who he is? And is there a buzz around him?
Very much so. You know, we sold a few breeding rights in him. The McCrackens came in, and Willie Pilkington, the Lynhams, you know, these guys were all taken. I think Willie Brett Jash, you know, some pretty serious breeders in Ireland came in and took a breeding right. And that's like just phenomenal, really. He's going to get the support of their mares in year one, the support of their mares in year two. We did a deal there where your breeding right gets you two noms in year one, two in year two. So he's going to have a huge amount of horses coming through, which is going to give him every chance.
Yeah.
And obviously, Mr. Abdulaziz has supported him as well. So he's very much on the map now. And we'll just see how he progresses, really. Obviously, it's quite exciting to think 3 or 4 years down the line what could happen. But
yeah. And are you going to add to your stallion portfolio, do you think?
I'd love to. It's not easy. Like, I feel like we got very lucky with Kuroshio. The situation came up. We had the finances behind us to do that and kind of fell into Micheál. And the stars slightly aligned. The breeding rights obviously have helped the whole thing just tick over, so kind of upfront money. And I just would struggle to see where you'd get that kind of luck again. And we are looking. And it would be lovely to find something on the similar lines. But I would say now, like, you try and buy something out of training to go to stud now, something like Cotai Glory, who is another son of Exceed and Excel. I know Tally Ho paid a lot of money for a horse. So I just think it could be difficult. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we are looking.
And of course, with Kuroshio, you had a tangential boost this year when Anthony van Dyck, who is out of Kuroshio's sister,
spot on, yeah,
won the Derby, which was amazing, really. But he just happened to gild this decision to bring him to Ireland.
What about that? It is like I say, the stars align with something, and you know, we obviously bought Kuroshio knowing all of these things. You know, we knew that Duncan was knocking around, we knew that Curious was knocking around, we knew that Anthony van Dyck was going well, with the chance of being a Derby horse. But for these things to actually come off, it's just fantastic. Yeah. So we've stood the horse in Ireland, and then suddenly, you know, an Irish bred horse that's so closely related to him goes and wins the Derby. It's a big boost for us. Yeah.
Now, apart from Shaden and Kurosho, are there any other of your purchases that we should know about? I think you bought a yearling who won for Michael Bell this season, didn't you?
Very cheap. Yeah, with a bit of help from Mike, to be honest. Bush Tucker Trial, Bungle in the Jungle, another son of Exceeding Excel, going very well at start, actually. There you go. So, no, that was a 10 grand. That was Tats Ascot again, actually. Yeah, so doing a little bit of business out of there. He won a race. He's knocking around in nurseries. George, I did a lot of work with George Scott, who's a big part of how I've actually managed to come forward on my own. George threw his weight behind me, which was really kind of him when I started this whole thing. And so we bought quite a few yearlings together last year, started a syndicate with the idea of actually trying to trade horses to Hong Kong. One of the horses in the syndicate is called Dragon Command, and he won very nicely at Hamilton the other day, had a bit of a bad luck there at York, but he'll go to the 7 furlong race at Goodwood, the nursery. And yeah. He's going to be a 10-12-1 shot, but he's going to be low in the weights and he'll be a lot of fun. We've got a great team of guys that own him. And then after that, there's a few coming out. I bought quite a nice Australia colt from Tally Ho that David Simcox got, unraced. He'll come out later in the year. And then a very nice Lope de Vega that George has got called Sarvan.
Yes.
He's doing some pretty good work on the gallops at the moment. Quite excited by him. So there's a few yearlings knocking around that are yet to come out, with some pretty exciting prospects anyway.
And finding those horses is, of course, only half the battle, because you need to find the clients, the owners, to give you the money and buy them. Can you just shed some light on what it's like for a young bloodstock consultant coming into the industry, trying to find those people willing to put their trust in you?
So tough. Yeah, I was very lucky with Mr. Abdulaziz that he gave me a chance, and he's kind of supported me financially. And I, you know, hopefully I've paid that back. But as a young guy, if I hadn't have had him, I keep telling you, I'd probably be selling nominations for someone, because you wouldn't be able to survive. I've been incredibly fortunate. So finding new people, it's really not easy. And small things like Shannon winning a listed race kind of shows that I've got a little bit of an eye in the industry. I might be able to do something. So you'd hope that a couple of people would trust you a little bit more. And there's some guys like Terry Henderson from OTI. He's let me buy him a couple of horses. He's just great at supporting younger people. But I've made a big point of trying to get out there. And any money that comes in is put back into advertising, put back into traveling. Yeah. I'd still go down to Australia. I've been to Hong Kong twice this year. I went to Singapore like completely on a whim. Just you had to keep going out and finding the next guy.
And did these trips bear fruit?
They did. We had a Hong Kong in January. Got a call from Tom Clover, who's a fantastic young trainer in Newmarket, and he said, "Look, I'm not going to be doing a lot in February. I think we should go somewhere. So it'd be great. Let's cut our costs, go and share a room in Hong Kong. Let's go and see if we can meet some people." And we went out there and we met a fellow Tottenham fan, which was great. So we had common ground with this bloke called Patrick, who's a superstar. And he came back for the Craven Breeze up, and we brought him a really nice Australia colt.
Good.
Which covers the cost of the trips, and you've got your foot in the door in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And hopefully, I really hope it's a horse that I think will suit Tom down to the ground. It's kind of a little bit of a later developing type, and I just think it should be good. And like I say, you've put your foot in the door, you're starting somewhere. So little things like that.
And do you mind if I ask then, what was the genesis of your association with Abdulaziz Al Rabban?
So George met Abdulaziz a couple of years ago when he was coming into racing. Mm. And like I say, George threw his weight behind me massively when I decided that I was going to try and do this on my own. And he took me to Qatar and introduced me to this guy with the idea that he was going to grow and was going to need a racing manager. And so from there, you know, so it is all just credit to George, really. And so we had 4 or 5 days in Qatar and being looked after incredibly well by Mr. Abdulaziz. And, eating a lot of boiled goat on his farm, which was quite interesting. Yeah. So, yeah. And it came from there, and we've kind of gone strength to strength from there. And that was that, really.
Yeah. And do you think Al Rabban Racing, will they be traders? Will Shaden, do you think, eventually go to auction or be sold privately, or is he looking forward to breeding from her?
He's fairly looking forward to breeding from her, I'd say. You know, if a crazy offer came in, you'd have to advise him to sell it. He is a businessman at the end of the day. Nothing crazy has come in. He is open to offers on anything. you know, he, like I say, he's not just throwing money at this. He quite likes the idea of sort of trying to be a little bit clever than everyone else and making a few quid here and there, which I think is great. And this is actually to the point now we're actually going to look to put a bit of money into some yearlings in Australia, just because he's a bit fed up with the prize money situation here, which is fair enough. I think everyone is. So I think with her, her pedigree is so good that it would be a lot of fun for us to try and breed from her. So I would say she's going to struggle at three. She's not overly big. So we've got a bit of time to wait, and we might have a bit of a dry year next year with her. But, you know, nonetheless, we've got horses there, and we've got all of our horses with Charlie Budget at Kirtlington Park Stud. Got quite a few mares there. We brought the sister to Talent, which is great, and a couple of other nice horses. And
there for Carroccio.
She actually did go to Carroccio, but you know, if that pedigree keeps improving, which it has, obviously Talent on the page, and then King Power for the this horse called King, the filly that she's now got her black type as well. So it's kind of an improving family. So might try and upgrade her at some point. We'll see.
Seems to be a slight sort of sign of the times, isn't it, that you're getting new owners coming in that aren't just looking to necessarily race per se. All options are open when it comes to sort of selling or trading. Or I know you mentioned the partnership that you've got with George with the Dragon
just
horse.
The prize money situation here, it's just, it's a nightmare. It reflects on so much as well. I think the lack of prize money just trickles down to this polarisation in the actual sales markets, you know, just kind of pumping those people into that kind of mid-leagues of those sales just doesn't really exist, because you can't go and get 10 guys from the city and tell them it's a good idea to put 10 grand each into a horse, because you're going to get so much prize money back, like you would in Australia or Hong Kong or wherever. You know, here you go and win a maiden. I think Shadden won a maiden at Kempton. She got $3,500 back, and her training fees were, you know, not much shorter than that kind of thing. So you won a month's training fees. And that listed race the other day, she won 14 grand, and you take away all your, you know, trainers and jockeys, she got $12,500 in the bank. Now, I mean, I had a look at the provincial races yesterday, the price of the provincial race in Australia, there's a minimum of 35,000 Aussie dollars. So you'd win more for winning a maiden in the provinces than winning a listed race in England. Like, it's just, it's not good.
No, we rely far too much on the prestige of, the supposed prestige of British racing, don't we? And obviously that's not enough to pay bills.
Yeah, mad, mad.
I mean, when you're going to Hong Kong and Singapore and places and you're sort of trying to tout new business, how do you sell that?
It's very difficult. It's very difficult. So the syndicate we put together, George and I, the idea was if we found something good enough, we would sell it. But it's quite a sad time that we're having to get people in with the idea that we're going to make money by selling the horses on. You'd love to be able to get it to a point here where you had a, you were running for kind of a minimum prize money, but it would be enough that if you won one or two races a year, you'd at least be covering the majority of your training fees. Whether we'll ever get to that point, I don't know. I mean, looking at the Rubin brothers just sucking money out of ARC at the moment. I spoke to Ray Beckett about it the other day, and we were just talking about the media rights per horse, which is about a, it's undisclosed, but it's about a grand per horse. And the race course is only obliged to put 33% of that back into the racing. And it just makes life very difficult. You know, how do you then promote the sport to anyone? You know, no one wants to go and throw money down the drain. So, especially friends our age who we're trying to bring into horses, they just can't see, they can't see the sense.
Well,
on a brighter note, we're coming to the end of our podcast, so we thought we'd just look forward to the King George on Saturday, which looks like being a fantastic race, and tap into your brain cells and try and find what, find out what you think of the race and who might win. We have Enable versus Crystal Ocean versus Anthony Van Dyke. Who would be your pick at the prices?
It looks like Enable's quite short, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I think this morning she was 7-4 on,
right,
which is fairly lively. And Crystal Ocean's about 3-1. But I was just, as I mentioned to you outside, when they met in September, there was obviously an £8 difference between the two. And I mean, she battered him, to be fair. But he just looks like a horse just coming into form, and quick ground doesn't bother him, doesn't bother her either. Yeah. They both got form at Ascot. But, you know, only a £3 difference. He's absolutely flying at the moment. You know, he's very similar form to last year. He had three wins on the bounce, one every month, went into this race and got done a neck. And he's done the same this year. He's had his three wins, one a month. He's had a good break. He'll come into the race. And I just reckon it's going to be super competitive. I'm not sure Anthony Van Dyke's quite good enough to be in the shake-up with those two, I don't think.
Even with his...
Even carrying 8-10. I just, like, the Derby was fairly suspect, I think, in terms of the form. Circus Maximus and Sovereign. But
you're not supposed to say that when we're promoting Kurosho. It's a close relation.
No, I know. This is it. He's got his group one. He's done it. But yeah. I would be tipping him to come third. I mean, it looks like they're not going flat out. It'd be one of those races. You're going to have a bit of probably have a pacemaker in there to try and suck the sting out of those two good horses. And Anthony Van Dyke come late, and you've got Sallow in there. That runs, that'll be on pace. And I would say it'll be difficult. It's good to see a three-year-old back in the race anyway.
Yeah. I mean, Abel should win, shouldn't she, on the ratings? But you'd be scared throughout the race if you took 4-7.
The form line there with those two horses is magical. Now, I know Magical got a bit of a suspect ride. Not suspect, sorry. She was a bit unlucky at Ascot. And she, you know, she lost to Crystallation. She was there was a difference of a length and a quarter. And Enable's met Magical twice in the last 12 months, and there's only been 3/4 of length between them. And you just feel, you know, there's a lot to suggest that it could be a lot tighter than everyone's saying, I think. Yeah.
James, do you think there's anything in there to upset the big three?
Well, I don't know if it's a big three. Is it a big two? I mean, I'll be sort of with you in that. I think Anthony Van Dyke's got a good bit to find. I mean, the thing is, obviously, being a young horse, getting the weight allowance, he's sort of coming there on a slightly steeper upward curve than the other two, isn't he? But
definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's one of those where you don't have to try and find an angle to bet. Do you just sort of sit back and enjoy, hopefully, Enable and Crystallation go hammer and tongs from 8 furlongs out, and we'll find out who the best one is, I think. Do you have a strong view either way?
Well, since if you had to have a bet, if you had to have a bet and not just enjoy the race
we're going to go for a Martin Stevens.
It's pretty good, yeah.
I looked at the prices and I thought Defoe being half the price of Waldgeist was odd, because talking about suspect races, I think Defoe, good horse, improving horse, but has won 2 races which looked below the class of their graded status.
Yeah.
So Waldgeist I like. And also Cheval Grand for Japanese Raider is probably slightly underestimated, because he's got some good form that ties in the likes of Armand Eye and Ray Deloro over there, who are very good horses. So we probably shouldn't underestimate him, as we often do with foreign horses, like we did with Nagano Gold behind Defoe at Royal Ascot. Yeah. So
I had a look at Cheval Grand as well. And he runs very well fresh.
Yeah.
And he ran there in Maidan, which he ran behind Old Persian, who I know it hasn't done very well this year, but you know, it's not easy running behind those Godolphin horses on home turf. Like, he ran a huge race there, and he could be one to fill that third spot, definitely. 25-1 is a great price.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's put up Cheval Grand.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Take some abuse for that later. But
Okay, well, great. Well, you're going on holiday now, aren't you? Straight on holiday to Italy.
Ben, I wish I was staying here. I think it's warmer here at the moment, but yeah.
What part of Italy are you going to?
Going to Lucca, which is in Tuscany. So we've got a good team of guys going out there, and it should be quite entertaining.
And you'll be able to tune into the Racing Channel to watch the big race at Ascot on Saturday?
Definitely. It's a fairly lucky spot. I think I was there last year and got the Kurosho deal over the line nearly. So hopefully get a bit of business done while I'm there, which would be great.
Yeah.
Celebrate your Cheval Grand.
Yeah. It comes in, there we go.
Perfect. Well, enjoy your holiday, and I hope everyone enjoys the hot weather, and we'll see you again on the next podcast.